Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Ma'at-Hotep. Welcome to another segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and as usual, we thank you for taking the time to tune in to our regular Saturday radio broadcast. We are going to continue with, of course, this month being Black Music Month, and so we're going to kind of review some of the things that we went over last week, and with that said, we're going to do a continuation of the dialogue that we were having last week that addresses relationships between the Black man and the Black woman, and of course, our families and communities. So we're going to, of course, talk a little later on with the various persons that we were speaking with last week. That, of course, included Dr. Maurice Henderson, who held a mini-conference this past Monday here in Philadelphia to at least look at or look closer at that issue, that kind of shall we say, subject matter in addressing relationships, you know, in looking at where they are today, what can we do about them to improve those relationships, and so forth and so on. So we're going to tonight talk a little more about that with the idea of solutions. That's really what we want to focus on. You know, how can we improve? How can we not only do self-analyzation, but collective work and responsibility? How about that? Before we go into tonight's program, we always give thanks and praises to our Creator, and certainly we are always very appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. Okay, with that said, we're going to get ready to go to our first segment for tonight, which we have in the past few months been opening up with a history, her story, our story kind of segment that gives us information and insight into some of the legacy, some of the contributions, and some of the notable, very notable things that some of our people have done and contribute to not just the U.S., but to the world, you know. So we're going to go to that segment very shortly. And before we do that, we want to send our condolences out to the Corbett Banks family. Brother Corbett became an ancestor a few days ago. And this weekend, if you're in the Philadelphia area, I'm sure you knew of the brother named Corbett Banks. Very, very good brother. Made transition a few days ago, and his services is this weekend. And, of course, again, we want to send our best wishes and prayers to the family and friends of Brother Corbett Banks. Okay, what we're going to also do is remind you that we have a lot of things coming up very soon. You know, it's very interesting how we are really seeing things unfold all over the world. You probably have heard there is stuff brewing again in the so-called eastern part of the world as it pertains to Africa or thereabouts, and specifically Iraq. You know, we want to talk a little bit about that later on, but certainly, you know, as these world events begin to manifest even more, it becomes clearer that there are just a few players in the real scheme of things. And so the question has to be, where does that put the rest of us? If we have people power tricking in the way that they're doing, and I mean in a serious way, then it really kind of has us going, what is it that we need to be doing? Certainly we would suggest we have to absolutely have our own everything. Obviously, we need to talk more about our being able to govern ourselves, since so many people are afraid of the word our own government or the phraseology our own government. Perhaps if we can just say we need to learn to govern ourselves, maybe that might be more comfortable for some. We're going to have that dialogue too a little. But we want to also remind you all that you know, there's some very serious things going on in the world, and it's nothing new. It's always been some serious things going on, but this is really starting to not only be interesting, but something that we dare say we better start paying a little closer attention to. I mean, never before has there been an impact on our food supply, our energy supplies, so forth and so on. I mean, while there's always been something that has been awry, especially as it pertains to people of African descent, certainly we could not say that the food was poisoned and the water was poisoned and the air was poisoned and some of this being done intentionally. Well, we could certainly say it now without a shadow of a doubt. We know that social engineering is very much in effect, and needless to say, population control is in on this. So things we better start looking at a little more and beginning to address as well. At any rate, we are going to move right along. I was supposed to be in D.C. today for actually three different programs, but unfortunately, some other things came up. I was not able to go to none of them, but what we're going to do is get some reports for you next week on the three events we were supposed to attend today in Washington, D.C. Two of them were two that I was really looking forward to because Dr. Kwame Nana Shante was attending one, and that particular one included Dr. Francis Crest Welsing, so I can't wait to hear what the report is on that one. Brother Tony Browder was also in attendance. And then there was another program for those who know, who are familiar with Positive Kemet, the brothers from the Positive Kemet, PVK I think it's called. They had a program today for Juneteenth, and that's something else we want to also kind of look, examine a little further, and that is for those who observe Juneteenth, celebrations. If there's some information you want to share with us about that, we're going to give you the opportunity to do so. You know, what does Juneteenth mean to you today? What should it mean to us today? It is a part of our history, so how do we go about in observing it or celebrating it, or should we? We want to ask that question a little later on. At any rate, we're going to go to our live line in a few moments, and we're going to bring in Sister Coker, who is going to share with us who our history, her story, our story persons are for this evening. And we want to remind you again that we are also going to talk about black man, black woman relationships and how that is connected to our families and communities. Well, we better begin to do something because, again, like not any other time before that we've seen, are we seeing what we're seeing now? And certainly we need to not only talk more about that, but we need to come up with some kind of solutions about what we're going to do about it because it is getting very, very serious. For those who tend to venture out there in the public transportation arena, well, then I'm sure you are seeing some things that you haven't seen, at least not to that magnitude that you're now seeing. And so, you know, again, we need to focus on what is it that we can do about it. Note, our dialogues are not an attempt to try to make America better, or shall we say, to reform America. That's not what our dialogue is about. Our dialogues are geared to what are we going to do, given where we're at and the various situations that we're in, what are we going to do, how can we do that, and how can we move forward within this maze of whatever. Again, it is not our, shall we say, efforts or our focal points to try to, you know, make America better, as they say. All that it has done to our people, I don't believe that's what our ancestors would want. However, at the same time, we need to make certain that we get what is rightfully ours. And again, that's what our radio broadcast is geared to. At any rate, We're going to go to our live line, and we're going to bring in Sister Coca for this June the 21st. Oh, and remember, family, this is the summer solstice. And so we want to also ask the question, how can we have the summer solstice be more advantageous for us? Now, obviously, anything that is of a natural occurrence more than likely has some possibility of you tapping into it and being able to be regenerated or, some other kind of essence can be grasped and attained from it. Well, I dare say the summer solstice has that potential, and so for those who have those experiences or know of those experiences, a little later on you could share with us some of what you might do or what you would suggest in terms of tapping into some of the energy, some of the synergy of the summer solstice. Okay. All right. Without ado, we're going to go to our live line, and we're going to bring in Sister Coca, who, again, is going to tell us about who our legends are for this evening. Sister Coca, do we have you on this line?
Yes. And praise
and greetings to you.
For the opportunity to research and share with my quintessential people. Now, tonight, of course, this is, I like to say, indigenous Africans born in the United States. This is our month to feature our music. And so here are some of the people who are musically inclined who were born this month. We'll begin with Prince. He was born the 7th, 1958. In Minneapolis, Minnesota. He is known for his provocative musical and personal style. Prince Rogers Nelson is his actual name. His parents, Maddie Shaw Nelson and John, were jazz musicians. Prince taught himself to play guitar, drums, and piano. He acquired his first recording contract at 20 years. Prince's style was influenced by James Brown, George Clinton, Jimi Hendrix, and Little Richard. In 1996, Prince married Maytie Garcia, a former dancer and backup singer with his group. And I particularly enjoy When Doves Fly. Now we'll move on to Andre Watts, who was born the 20th in 1946 in Nuremberg, Germany, in a United States Army camp. And he is known as the first black North American instrumentalist superstar. At age 16, after 60 years absence, Andre, a black, played with the New York Philharmonic Orchestra. In 1954, the family moved to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, to study at the Philadelphia Academy of Music. Andre credits his mother as a critical influence because she made him practice. The third person born this month is Lena Horne. The 17th in 1917, Brooklyn, New York. And I think she left us in 23rd, exact date on that. Now, her refusal to play stereotypical roles helped transform the black woman's image. To help her family, Lena dropped out of high school and became a chorus dancer in Harlem's Cotton Club. Lena married, bore two children with, and then divorced Lewis Jones after 4 years. Lena was acquainted with Paul Robeson at one time during her career. She was a singer, a film star, and Lena is best known for her movie and song, Stormy Weather. Her final award-winning show became the longest-running one-woman show ever. Lena received from the NAACP the Spingarn Medal, along with many other acknowledgments. And in closing, please remember, not ready to close yet, let me see. The final one, Henry Osawa Tanner. He was born the 21st in 1859, born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and died May 25th, 1937, in Paris, France. His father was a bishop of the African Methodist Episcopal Church. The name Osawa, O-S-S-A-W-A, is from Osawatomie, O-S-A-W-A-T-O-M-I-E, which was the site of John Brown's anti-slavery raid in Kansas. At 10 years, Tanner began painting and studied at the, here we are back in Philadelphia again, Philadelphia Academy of Fine Arts. In 1891, he moved to Paris and remained until he died, trying to escape the racial hatred in the United States. And one of his best-known paintings, The Banjo Lesson.
Banjo.
Mm-hmm. And yep. Now, finally, please remember, and this is an easy solution to improving our life pollution. Please call the children. Children, teach children safety now, TCSN, and call adults, men and women. I'm so tired of guys and kids. Thank you so much.
All right, my sister, and thank you as well. Now, I know you won't have the answer to this, but interestingly enough, one of the discussions that we have had in the past was about whether or not Prince, for example, kind of led the way for what we're now seeing in some of the music and also in some of the what we call subcultures of today, and that is the androgynous look, meaning is it a male or is it a female?
Right.
So it's interesting that you selected him, but definitely considered one of the people who ushered in that kind of look and to some degree, you know, was the extension of, do you remember the person, the artist that they used to call Sylvester?
Yes.
Okay. Well, it has been said that the other person, you mentioned James Brown and a few others, so has been said that one of the people who also kind of played a role in Prince's characterization of whatever came from Sylvester.
Okay, that was
interesting. I'm sorry, say it again?
I might also add that most of the information is from the Africana, the Encyclopedia of the African and African American Experience. And I just want you to notice some things that I could not find in this encyclopedia. Oscar Brown Jr., Billy Paul, Charles Fuller, the Miss Black America, Joe Williams, Leah Richards, who was an actress, Jimmy Scott, Autobahn, who created the National Autobahn Society, and Juneteenth isn't in this dictionary, encyclopedia. And I'm making a list, and so far, when you mentioned Juneteenth, I looked it up, and I said, it's not in here.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So now, who wrote that book? Is that someone of African descent?
Yes, Kwame Anthony Appiah and Henry Louis Gates Jr. are the editor.
Of all people.
It's a huge, wonderful, it reads like a storybook. I mean, I love this encyclopedia. But as you see, it leaves out a lot of people, a lot of things that should be in here, and it has a lot of today's so-called hip-hop people in here. I'm going to make a list of the who are in here that could not have been in here if they're going to leave the people out that I just mentioned.
What we want to do for maybe as we proceed with future persons that we want to present, we might want to look closer at people who make contributions that really lend more to our freedom, or at least suggest that or something. Okay?
Indeed. And try to find who was born in that month, but I will focus in on more, as you said, the people who are worthy, truly worthy of the research.
Yeah, because see, what we want to do, my sister, is, of course, there's so many radio programs and TV programs and magazines, and, you know, the majority of them will focus on, you know, the very popular people who, you know, they want us to celebrate them, okay? And, I mean, and that's good, but I think it's important that we kind of go to the next level and also make certain that we bring in people who we know they're not going to necessarily give that kind of accolade to, because it would perhaps encourage people to think out the box or to do something differently or, you know, to make a statement in a certain kind of way. And so we want to make sure that we highlight them, because we know the other people are not, for the most part. You know, there's so many actors and actresses and artists and so forth who make, you know, have made so many contributions, but most of our people would not know that because they were not popularized. And we know why. So we're going to make sure that we kind of put forth even more of an effort to highlight some of them as well. We want to know about all of them, needless to say, because all of our history is important. But we want to also make sure that we highlight some of those who are not necessarily given recognition to.
Indeed.
So I'm curious about, well, you know, Louis Gates is an interesting person anyway. When you start doing research on him, he almost makes you ask, how is he really black? I mean, that's some of the statements and things that he's said and done makes you want to almost ask that question.
Yeah, well, you know, this really is a beautiful encyclopedia, and it's a good source, but I can dig deeper.
Okay. All right. Well, and I will certainly assist in that process, and I'm sure our listeners will also, because we have so many really incredible researchers and authors that are involved in our radio broadcast, and so I'm sure that they're are some who can, you know, even provide us with some information about people who we may not be as familiar with. You know, we're always getting information about so many different topics. As a matter of fact, this is kind of off of what we were talking about, but speaking of people, there is a brother who was incarcerated, I think, for like 35 years, who just obtained his parole last week, Brother Sekou, and he was a political prisoner. So, you know, this, again, was a brother who was very active during the, I believe, the late 50s and definitely early 60s in the movement, and, of course, was in the Black Panther Party and so forth and so on. And we just got word the other day that he has obtained his freedom. You know, for at least not being locked up in those dungeons. So, you know, we are really thankful. And we say this to you, family, because sometimes we get discouraged when we go to the events or hear reports of Iman Jamil Alameen or Mumia or Matula Shakur, you know, because some of them have been in some even close to 40 years. So, needless to say, we definitely cannot give up. We definitely cannot get dismayed because Maroon Schultz is now free after over 40 years. You know, so we have to continue to fight those who definitely put themselves in the position to, you know, make certain that their voices was heard for us. So, again, you know, we send much, much respect and love out to Brother Sekou, and we're going to talk a little more about that a little later on as well. Okay. All right, Masukawa, I thank you again for bringing us those history, her story, our story tidbits, and we look forward to next week.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, family, we are going to get ready for our next segment. And with that said, we're going to talk a little bit more about relationships. Now, I went to the mini conference that Brother Maurice Peterson held on this past Monday here in Philadelphia. I can tell you it was very, very good. It was, you know, a very, I think, productive dialogue. You know, we have to always continue to remember that there are many of our people who are just hearing, you know, certain things, have just reached the point in their lives, perhaps, to examine what it is that's really going on. And so we always have to be cognizant that it's important to continue to have dialogue, no matter how much research or how advanced a situation might be or may have come, the facts still remain. There's always people coming in. There's always people growing and developing. And so we have to be responsible enough to make certain that we provide venues and information that's going to allow them to grow and to question and to become more aware of you know, a variety of topics and situations. And so on Monday, in attending the mini session or the mini conference on black male-female relationship, black woman, black man relationships, I think it was an excellent kind of way because it was intergenerational, as they say, meaning, you know, you had some young folks, you had some older folks. Therefore, it allowed a variety of views and ideas to be presented. Now, I was dealing with a session that focused on, of course, women, and so I found it really interesting, which I'm going to convey as we go into our dialogue for tonight. And I really, really enjoyed meeting Sister Yolanda, who should be joining us a little later on as well. But at any rate, we're going to get ready to go to our live line and give you an overview of what was discussed on Monday and kind of where we're going with this. Because, again, as we said last week, there are oftentimes conferences. I mean, when you, especially if you're online, you see so much all the time on conferences and dialogues and blogs and this and that. And so some of these things are ongoing kind of reality, but the question still is, what are we going to do? And so what the Million Woman Movement is about to propose, and not only propose, but to assert, is some action steps. One, we have created a society that is specifically geared to our women and girls to deal with a multi-level of things that we feel very strongly is going to assist in bringing about the types of behavior and the types of responses that we feel need to happen. We're going to deal with some very candid kinds of things, but also some very proactive kinds of things. And again, we're going to tell you more about that as we go on. But for right now, we're going to go to our live line, and I think we're going to bring in Dr. Maurice Henderson, who, of course, is an author as well as a director, you know, of plays and of so many different things. And, well, I'm going to let him tell you about that and also about what went on this past Monday and here in Philadelphia at the Rotunda for the mini conference that addressed the issue of black male-female relationships, our families, our communities, black folks, period. How can we move forward in developing these relationships? Now, one thing I can tell you that we talked about, of course, was to understand and know what it is that's really happening. Because if we don't do that, then certainly we won't know how to go forward. But
without further ado, we're going to go to our live line, and we're going to now kind of go to part two of what we started last week. And for those who were in tune last week, you can tell it got really hot, and it was definitely very, very productive. So let's go to our live line, and I think we have Dr. Maurice Henderson joining us right about now. Okay, Brother Maurice, do we have you on this line?
Hello? Hello?
Yes, do we have you?
Yeah, this is Maurice Henderson.
Very good.
Yeah.
How are you this evening?
I am wonderful, wonderful, really wonderful.
Very good, very good. So, Monday, congratulations on another excellent program. So I think we will start with you kind of giving your assessment of what took place on Monday.
Well, first of all, I really want to acknowledge the Black press with radio shows like yourself, Word, Scoop USA Newspaper, and West Side Weekly. They did a phenomenal job in getting the word out for the conference. We had no coverage at all promoting the conference from the white press. So I would say that the Black media was excellent and getting a packed room. And I like you said, it was intergenerational. And I also like the panel with the sisters, because now you saw some sisters representing some national movements, including yourself, and the idea that y'all was like sisters, and it was cool. Wasn't that arguing? I was like, it was so wonderful to see that happen on stage. And I think that my job was just to see if we can get sisters and brothers just to commit to working with our organizations and assisting them in having better and positive outcomes. And so I noticed how people were swarming you, talking to you. You had no chance, except until the end of the conference, to stand behind your table. I was like, okay, let us just be out there then. So I thought it was a great opportunity just for folks to see you once again after having not seen you in years, and just for a chance for some national organizations just to get together and see if we can work things out instead of haggling and battling each other.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things, of course, that we talked about on Monday and, of course, last week as well, and that is, how are we going to do this? Now, I think it looks like we might have Sister Yolanda ready to come on. I'm going to check and see in a moment because I definitely want to bring her, and I truly enjoyed interacting with that sister last week as well. Let me just check and see if this is her on this line. Sister Yolanda, are you on this other line here?
Hello?
Okay, nope, that's not Sister Yolanda. Yolanda, I'm
sorry.
Okay.
That's Jeremy
right,
Bamadeli.
I'm sorry, who is that?
Hello, this is Jeremy Bamadeli. I was a host for the conference for the Streetwise Family Values and Urban Community Violence portion.
Okay, very good. I don't remember meeting you, but welcome to this New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. And since you were not on last week, tell us a little bit about you.
My name is, I'm doing my master's in criminology at the University of Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also doing journalism with the local newspapers and the national newspapers as well. I just had an article published in the New Pittsburgh Courier about anti-effeminacy in the Black community.
About anti-what?
Anti-effeminacy.
Okay. Could you elaborate on that? Because maybe I'm not hearing it correctly, but I'm not familiar with that. What does that mean?
It means a dislike towards men who are not masculine, men who carry feminine traits within the Black community, and where that stems from.
Okay.
Are you understanding the topic?
Okay. Yeah, I understand it, and I'll go back to that in a few moments.
Oh, please don't. Please don't. Please don't. Don't. Don't.
So I'm sorry. Go ahead. Please continue.
Sorry? Do continue?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yes. So the paper addressed where that comes from in terms of income disparities and how being more feminine as a man causes you to earn less money, and about how we try to protect the amount of dollars in our community and how that manifests itself in anti-effeminacy towards feminine men. It also addresses slavery and the rape of African-American men within slavery, as well as the rape of men who are incarcerated in the prison industrial complex, and how all of those things combined together create a system and a political and cultural system in which there is a dislike towards feminine men.
That's a whole lot. That's a whole lot. So I was saying, don't go there with that.
So just so that I'm clear, so is that different from homosexuality?
Yes, it's different from homosexuality.
Okay.
However, much of the dislike towards feminine men also comes from a dislike of homosexuality within the Black community. And that doesn't come from a natural dislike. That comes from a socialized dislike due to the experiences that exist within the Black community. At this point in time, approximately 1 in 10 African-American men is incarcerated. During that time, many are raped within prisons. And experiences such as that, when they come out and they return to their community, it sticks with them and it spreads throughout the community. And a anti-homophobia spreads, and implicit within that anti-homophobia is a dislike towards feminine men who are automatically perceived to be more likely to be homosexual themselves.
Okay. Well, this is going to be an interesting dialogue tonight, I'm sure. Okay. Well, you see, Brother Maurice, why didn't you prepare me for this? Okay. Wow. All right.
Well, maybe we can go to Yolanda. Oh, God.
Okay. All right, so you should see how my board's just lit up. Yeah, my boards have just lit up like I can't even tell you. Okay, because I'm sure there's a lot of clarity that people would like to have. And before we go into that, I think what I'd like to do is see if we have Sister Yolanda. Okay, caller at 0320. I just need to check to see if that is one of our panelists. You're at 0320?
Yes, hi.
Is this
me,
Sister Yolanda?
It
oh,
is.
Great.
Hello,
okay,
boy.
Very good. How you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Oh, just fine. Just fine to hear you.
Good.
Okay. I don't know if you've heard what we have just been talking about.
No, I came in on the end of it with the person was talking about incarceration and homosexuality. I didn't get
okay.
everything.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. That was me.
Okay.
I'm Jeremy Bamadelli. I met
Hi,
you at
Jerry.
The conference. Very nice to meet you. Very nice to meet you again.
It's good to meet you, too. I missed what you were saying. If you don't mind, I'd like to be updated on I feel lost.
Okay. Well, hold that point, because we're going to go back to that, and you're, I'm sure, going to get a whole earful in a few minutes. hold on.
You know what I'm saying? Correct me.
Before we do, let's just kind of recap from Monday, the mini conference. Sister Yolanda, give me your feedback on how you felt the conference went, and anything else you might want to share with us about, your participation and just, again, anything, your overview.
Well, I think the conference was a success. It was awesome. I think it met a need that it was trying to meet, and it wasn't just a lot of talk. It was good information that people can take with them, and if anyone missed it, I don't know what to tell them, but it was just amazing. It was awesome.
All right, very good. And on that note, Brother Maurice, is the video going to be available, or are there any kind of snippets that can be seen on YouTube or anything like that?
Good question. And I think Alex is on the line, and I think that Alex is going to speak more to how he intends to make a lot of that available. I hadn't even thought about that, but that would be a great idea. So I think that would be good for Alex to address.
Okay. I think I do see Alex, and I'm going to bring him in right about 5, 4, 3, 2. Alex, you're on.
Yes.
How
yes,
you doing?
This is Alex. How you doing?
I'm very good.
Hey, how's it going, crew?
Hey.
Well, I just been sitting back listening to.
I don't want to get started. I don't want to go down that lane. I really don't.
I did capture the whole conference on video, and we will look for ways to put it on some snippets on YouTube, each segment. I think it's about 3 minutes. So I also will produce a copy for Maurice so he can have at his disposal, as well as Yolanda as well.
Thank you, Alex.
Okay. No problem. And I hope I'm included in that, too.
Well, you can get one, too. I have no problem with that either. Things look different when you look at the footage.
They really put us
out
there, because it's like, right over you.
The eyes in the sky don't lie. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay, no problem. All right, before we dive into this dialogue, Alex, could you please give us your overview of the conference? What do you think about it?
Well, I think, as always, I think it was very inspirational. I think it was very informative, the dialogue that took place. And I think it was a lot of chatter afterwards that people was very intrigued by what the dialogue presented and some of the solutions and challenges we chose to address. And there was a thirst that I felt that people was looking to drink more of what we were serving them. So we got to find other ways to make sure that we keep folk engaged and have the conversation continue, and really put these things out there and put some urban legends, the myth, to bed too, because I think there's too many urban legends out there, and we just got to be proponents of it and control that narrative, because if others control it, then they can write the story how they see things are. So, but for the most part, and Maurice and I've been chatting this week, as well as Yolanda, that, the feedback I've been getting has been, hey, man, this was like great. This was like really, really good. So, and that's my observation as well.
That night, the president of the Guardian Civic League was there, and it was his goal and
still
idea.
Oh, okay. I was thinking, so they must, I remember Michelle Bilal, so she's no longer the president.
I don't have his name available, but you probably would know more than I would know of who he is. But he announced that he was the president of the Guardian Civic League, and what he wanted to do was take this across the city and introduce this to various segments of the city, and for events hosted by his organization. So I felt as though that was just a good opportunity for us to get further out there and discuss the issues. And then, you know, I was at the House of Emoja, and they were also discussing how awesome the event was. And then I was at the University of Pennsylvania later the next day, and some staff members also said that they really enjoyed the event.
Okay, great. Okay, well, I will give my assessment, I guess, shortly. I'm going to wait a few moments because I'm telling you, my boards are really lit up, which means people are, like, wanting to get into this dialogue. So I'm going to do that and give, again, my assessment a little later on. But I think we have Sister Iya Ajua wants to jump in here, and I think I'm going to bring her in right about now. Sister Mahotep.
Mahotep to Sister Soleil. I want to thank you again for, you know, always sharing wonderful information with the African family. I want to thank the panel for doing a wonderful job as well. I'm sorry that I missed the event, and looking forward to accessing it, you know, either by purchase or, you know, seeing clips on YouTube. So, you know, keep up the good work, and strongly agreeing with the brother who just said that that we need to get a hold of the narrative and tell our story, especially the, you know, the African our stories about African men and women. We need to tell our stories because there's a lot of misinformation. There's a, you know, there are programs in place, you know, that are that work to keep African men and women apart, and we have to stop that. You know, I would like to know what sources is the person that spoke on the anti-feminization of black males, what sources that person used? Just some of them, not all of them, but just interested, what sources is that person using?
I think that was Jerry. That was your name, Jerry? Okay. Wait a minute. We're having a problem hearing you.
Okay.
Are you there?
Hello? Hello?
Okay. Yes.
Hello?
Yes. Hello, I was asking what sources are you using? Could you share some of the sources that you're using for your information on the anti-feminization of the black male?
I use a variety of sources. I also taught within the prison system, so many of it was also my opinion based on my personal experience teaching at Santa Ana Jail in California.
Okay, so you did case studies?
No, I did not do case studies. I did use case studies in my paper, and I do have citations available.
Oh, okay. Are you able to share where people can access your paper?
Yes, you can access my paper at the New Pittsburgh Courier.
Okay. And the title is The Anti-Feminization of the Black Male. Is that the title?
It's anti-effeminacy within the black community. So it's not making black men more or less feminine. It's about a feeling of a dislike of feminine men within the black community. And it's not so much about how that hurts our community, but about where that comes from.
Okay. You're black?
Yes, I am.
Okay. All right, thank you.
No problem.
Now,
let me say this. He is from, his background is Jamaican, and he's also from Orange County, California. So what you hear in his voice may not sound like traditional ethnic black folks, but yeah, he's definitely an African American young male, and I would say that if you go online and put Jeremy J E R E M Y Bamideli B A M I D E L E, then all of his articles will come up with all his documentation on the articles.
Okay, no problem. I'll probably more likely remember the title of the article. But also, can I share one other thing? If you have time, Mr. Fulay?
Sure.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I do not celebrate Juneteenth. I think it is a holiday of trickery and deceit. I don't think it's a holiday that we should acknowledge or celebrate unless we're talking. What we should be doing is definitely speaking about it in terms of the continuation of the trickery and deceit of our ancestors, along with getting them, you know, it's actually a very strong impetus for the reparations movement. So I don't celebrate Juneteenth in that regard. So I wanted to share that.
All right.
So interesting thing. I was trying to consider how to relate the issue of Juneteenth in the conference, and some of the elders said, leave that alone. That's don't touch that at all. So that's one thing that I've been trying to look at Juneteenth as a race relationship issue, and I was just told just to leave that matter alone and don't mix oranges with apples.
Mm. Okay, and therein is another aspect of our dialogue as well. And I'm going to introduce that in a few moments. But before I do, I want our guests and family listening audience to know that those who are not familiar with Sister Iya Ajua, she is also Dr. Iya Ajua, PhD in African American Studies. Sister, I'm really glad you mentioned your position about Juneteenth, because I think it's important that that there's other dialogue that is introduced into some of the things that we oftentimes hear and are encouraged to participate in without really thinking about it or doing a proper type of assessment of it. So I want you to take a few moments to, if you please, elaborate on why you feel it is trickery.
Well, as the story goes, the information was deliberately withheld from our ancestors that they were, quote unquote, free. And so you had the white community that deliberately withheld that information and continued to hold our ancestors in bondage, working the land for free.
Mm-hmm.
And, so in that sense, it was, because it was deliberately, the deliberate withholding of information, that's the trickery and deceit that's involved in that situation. And, once our ancestors, did find out, it was, of course, they, some of them left, some of them didn't know what to do because there was no transition. There was no transitional assistance put in place right away for African people once, quote unquote, enslavement ended, And so that's pretty much why I had that position. Also, I believe that it's it's things like that, situations like that, that continue to hold African people in enslavement. I mean, because, I mean, physically, we're no longer enslaved, some of us, but mentally, mm-hmm. A good majority of us continue to be enslaved, as well as physically, some of us are still enslaved. Part of the works of Antoinette Harrell, who was working with people in Louisiana and Tennessee in those areas in the deep South, where you still have African people still working the land, you know, and they are enslaved. They, you know, they buy from a general store on a property and everything, and they are being mm-hmm. cheated out of their land, cheated out of their money. No one, you know, people don't want to talk about this, but this enslavement thing has not ended. And none of us are free if one of us are in chains, as the Solomon Burke song goes.
Hey, is it possible that I can look you up as well?
Oh, yes, you can look me up. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I have a website, WEHEMYMESU.com, WehemiMesu.com.
M-E-S-U?
Yes. Wehemi Mesu, WEHEMYMESU. It means repetition at a rebirth. And so if you just put in my name also, all my information
okay.
will come up. And that's capital IYAEI,
mm-hmm.
you know, that means mother, and Adjua, ADJUA. Capital ADJUA, Adjua, born on Monday. And so
okay.
if you put in EI Adjua, all of my sites, my social media connections, and my website will come up. And I'm on Facebook.
And your last name
Twitter.
Is AEJUA, right?
AD. D as in.
AD, I'm sorry. Okay, AD.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
D as in dad. ADJUA, EI Adjua.
Okay,
and,
thank
and,
you.
And can I ask, where do you teach? African studies.
I teach it in the community wherever I'm called.
Okay.
You know, I would like this. You know, they talked about this on Melissa Harris Perry's show today
mm-hmm.
about Juneteenth and how people in Texas kept the people enslaved extended 2 years and they didn't
mm-hmm.
know they was free. And
mm-hmm.
another thing is, you know, we have to, as a people of color. We have to stop with this toxicity and this toxic stuff that we continue to feed to others with misinformation and act like these things are exclusive to people of color and black folk. There are a lot of movements that has been...
I'm confused. Stop right there. Wait a minute. Is there a different... people of color and black folks, what are we talking about? Which one are we talking about here?
Well, I consider people of color black
like,
folk.
That could be considered the same thing, or are we talking about two different groups here?
Well, let me say it this way. Let me say black folk, okay? Let me just put African.
Okay.
Let me put.
Okay.
So what I'm saying is this, that, you know, when you look at a lot of movement, a lot of our movement has been hijacked. And since talking about race in this country is a third rail issue, a lot of people have hijacked it. A lot of things. The homosexual community have hijacked it and made that in combination with ethnicity, which those are orientation and ethnicity are two different things. The people have used the civil rights thing as making that comparable and compatible with movements they want to push ahead. But they don't want to give enough credit to all those things. Like I always tell folks, when you see me, you know who I am, and those things cannot change. And perception is a very strong antidote when you want to discriminate against based on how I look as opposed to what character that I possess. So, you know, I don't – and I just got a strong dislike of how these things only exist within our communities.
I'm confused because –
here you go. So I'm going to make it plain for you. This anti-feminist – feminization of men, of black men. That's I don't subscribe to that, because if you look at it, feminine men have always been in our community. So you can't indict. So you can't indict one. You can't indict the whole based on one. And they have been in every sector of our society. And anytime, watch this, anytime the people who come out, like, let's use Trayvon Martin. So those same people who say that they've been discriminated against in the, you know, homosexual community, do you ever see them march on that behalf? Nope.
I don't think we can say that. I mean, well.
Well, I'm saying that's. Let me put it this way. That's known. That's out there. That's what I'm talking about publicly. I'm not saying that people don't, but I'm just saying. I'm just saying when there's certain things people want to voice, they voice. Mm-hmm. Now I'm not saying they don't, but I'm just saying that's pronounced, that's seen, that's taken a stand. So
as a clear, direct statement.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Wait. So what you're saying that it was like not the black and gay lesbian coalition saying that we don't support the treatment of what happened to Trayvon Martin.
Trayvon Martin, maybe. Well, stop and frisk. We can go on forever, but you don't see those people backing those kind of injustices. Now, I'm talking about when they want equal treatment, and I don't think people should be treated unfairly. But you don't see that same kind of push behind that publicly.
Wow. Hmm. Y'all saw something else.
No, I'm just putting it out there. I mean, because I'm in the politics heavy, and I read tons of stuff, and I also have talked to men in prison and did training and all those kind of things. So I'm just saying a lot of times we get hijacked it. And like I say, whoever controls the narrative, write the story. So I want to make sure the story is told.
And who do you believe controls the narrative?
Say it again?
And who do you believe controls the narrative?
Whoever has the pen and that voice and the power.
That's
but
right.
Do you believe
and
that any particular community control that narrative?
Okay,
that's who controls the narrative. That's very true.
Well, I'm gonna put it to you this way, I'm a third rail guy anyway. The fight really is about a rich white guy, straight guy, and a homosexual rich white guy. That's the fight. We just part of the collateral damage. So when you see movements, because they the one that brought up being homosexual is like being black, which I don't even agree with that.
Right, I don't agree with that either.
So when they use that, because they knew subconsciously, and they knew that anybody challenged that, then that it will be seen as disliking somebody based on their ethnicity, not their orientation. So they're very skilled in how they did that.
I understand that, and I agree with that, but I think that issue is a separate issue from dislike that we have within our own community towards our own community members. These are cross-sectional communities. So gay communities exist within the black community as well.
But I think, Jeremy, that we can say that about a lot of different aspects of the African community. Like, there's going to be, you know, everyone doesn't like everyone, just like everyone doesn't love everyone. You know, so that, you know, I think that you can say that about different aspects of the African community. And I think that research like what you have done also further projectiles that image of the strong black woman, which is, you know, I don't subscribe to that, you know, because I know I'm a black woman and I do what I need to do, but I know sometimes I need help. And I don't have a problem asking for help. And I cannot do it by myself. And I don't want to do it by myself. I'm thankful that I have my husband here with me, raising my son, my family. He's here with me. He supports me. You know, I get on his nerve. He gets on my nerves. I'm very thankful for that. We love each other. You know, and I think that that image of the black man and the black woman needs to be put out there equally, if not in an elevated sense, above all else, because when a black man and a black woman comes together, we are the ones that bring the ancestors forward, because that's all we are, our ancestors return. And so when we talk about these different kinds of relationships, I'm the kind of person that if you're not talking about bringing forth more African people, I'm really not. I acknowledge your existence, but we definitely, I'm going to stay in my lane and you can stay in your lane, and I support what I support and you support what you support. And it's all good, too, you know.
I want to add something in, if I may. And then also we want to go to Yolanda. Yolanda, I know you're over there, so we get ready to bring you in here.
Okay.
But I want to also respond to something because I think it's important we kind of keep things in a context of today. And what that means is it's like because of the escalation of what is being feminization, being called feminization in our community, as it has been indicated, it's always been there. I think Jeremy stated that. I think someone else stated that. It's always been there. However, in 2014, what we're seeing today is certainly not what we have been seeing in previous years. The escalation, the visibility, the types of things that we're seeing is very, very different, and
yes,
as such, gives a signal and a representation or a misrepresentation to others. The other thing, too, that I think needs to be noted is that in our community, there are people that are hungry, that literally, you know, need food, are not getting a nutritious meal. But that's different when you're dealing with a famine. You see?
Yeah.
So
right.
While one thing exists, meaning hunger does exist, it's another thing when it reaches a point that it becomes so destructive that it really needs some attention, it really needs to be addressed. And that's kind of what we're seeing now. We're seeing an escalation. We're seeing this go to the level of a famine. You see? Oh, and one last thing. While our dear brother Alex says he's third world, I'm first world.
Who said first? Who said third world?
I said third world. But you got it.
Oh, my
I'm
bad. It's the first world. My bad. If I said that, that was a Freudian slip.
No problem. And when you were talking about the brother was talking about movements being hijacked, we need to look at too the hijacking of the Million Woman March movement as well, and we have to pay attention to that. And we have to acknowledge the fact that there has never been the largest group ever of women that came together in Philadelphia ever again on this planet, not before and not after. And so we have to pay attention to that movement as well. So I just wanted to put that out there. The Million Woman March movement is also a movement that is hot, that has attempted to be hijacked, you know, by different our fellow human groups, and you know, wanted to put that out there.
I want to ask a question. Who hijacked the Million Women March?
No.
Who attempted to hijack?
Who attempted to hijack?
Okay, I can answer that for you, and I'm surprised you don't know that by now, my brother, but certainly I can give it to you. First, let us try roughly, I think, maybe around 2000, when John Street was the mayor, and they decided to give proclamation to the Million Woman March, but I was invited. So they created a group called Sisters of the Million Woman March.
people who I had never met before. I only knew them a couple of months. They were all involved in some way, but, you know, for a couple of months. And so they created this group in order to try to sell Million Women March to the corporations, which I would not allow. So you had people running around because they were involved in some way for a couple of months. They would go ahead and create this group under the leadership of John Street, who helped them to get a 501c3 so that they could then get these grants and then create this Million Women March facade. So that was 1 year. Then they attempted to do it again. At that point, however, I went to City Council and they again did not invite me. And I issued a cease and desist order right in City Council, live and in color. Well, that dismantled that whole group. Now, that's just the group from Philly. I can tell you all over the country they attempted to do it. The majority of the sisters here in Philly, and I'm going to bring that back to Monday, we like big events. We like hoopla. But when it comes to doing work on a consistent mm-hmm. basis, and here's the real catch word, independently. Meaning, if you're not trying to get a grant or corporate sponsoring, people don't want to get involved.
Mm-hmm.
Why? So when we talk about hijacking movement, when the initiative went into effect all over the country, encouraging folks who were doing work in our community because they knew they should and could, and because they loved our people and they loved our ancestors and so forth, when people were just doing that because they knew they were supposed to, well, somebody introduced, get some money. That'll help you do your work better.
Yeah.
So they fell for that, and as a result, the work began to not only become stagnant, it got mm-hmm. weak, it got whitewashed. And this happened all over the country. So what that means is 95% of everything that goes on in our communities on a national level is funded. These are not people who just because they need to do this or want to do this, that's not what's happening anymore. So it was very easy for these other groups and issues and things to come in and co-op. Now, going back to the Million Women March, there was a group last year that called for a Million Women March for endometriosis.
Mm-hmm.
I knew nothing about it. These were Pakistani, Indian, and then they brought
yeah.
in all these white women.
I did hear about that.
Because, oh, yeah. And that was, again, because sisters here in the U.S., and this is why on Monday I said something to the effect of, folks talk about sisterhood, and they talk about helping black women, but I can't wait to see how many of those groups will contact me after Monday. I can't wait to see it. I don't even know what it's going to be, because I've already been to some of these groups, so I already know. And I think that's what's also important, and that is that we tell the truth about a lot of stuff, because right about now people are fronting with this, you know, illusion of passion for stuff. But if they were not getting a grant, would they be doing it? So these are critical questions that we have to now raise and ask very seriously. And I think it, you know, it might be a little upsetting to some, but it is. And we value the spirit of, which is, of course, truth, justice, order, reciprocity, and harmony. So, Cousin Marisa, did I answer that question for you? And that, by the way, you do know that in Egypt, what they call Egypt, they did have a Million Women March there a couple of years ago. Now, we were in support of that. But then they also called for a Million Women March in Nigeria this past
uh-huh.
March. We were also in
yes.
support of that.
Yeah.
But there was a group of women of color, which is why Alex please, you, in the future, you might want to just remove that one from your vocabulary. Because this women of color group in England wanted to have a Million Women March. But they wanted to, again, use reproductive rights as the Million Women March. I told them, hell no.
Can I intercede?
Because I
didn't
know what the gang plan was. Excuse me? So the point being, we had to really struggle these past years to bring this movement forward. We have now done so, meaning we've pretty much squashed all of the people who were attempting to, you know, be fraudulent or, you know, try to whitewash us. We pretty much duped them all. But it is real struggle. We're very thankful to have gone through that experience. But I can tell you that most of the politicians in the city of Philadelphia are anti-Million Women March. Why? Because they couldn't control us.
Right.
They couldn't control us. They had nothing to say or do beyond a certain point because we don't play these games with these people. They play a very serious game here, as in most
That's
cities.
Right.
Any, all of our people did a game, you know, very clearly. If Obama didn't show you what the real deal is, then you'll never know. And they use these black faces and what Dr. Randy Short called black necks. They use them to pacify us and make it seem like they're down with us or they're about us.
Yeah.
You see? Very so, good. Million Women March, we say, y'all liars. Straight up.
That's right.
And because we don't get funding from them or any of them or any people that they're connected to, then they can't hold that over us. They can't control or manipulate us. You see? And these are the types of stands that have to be taken today. And lastly, and I'm going to go back to you all, see, they can't co-op us. See, this is how you are subject to that happening. When you start reading and buying into what they're talking about and going along with it, then they drag you right on in. And next thing you know, they done took it over. See, they can't do that with us. Why? Because we stay black. No ifs, ands, maybes about it. We don't mix none of that. Women of color, diversity, none of that. Have no need for it. We're not trying to front none of that. I don't have a 501, so I don't have to abide by those guidelines. We've been self-determined from day one. It was my money that started it. Anybody else got anything to say about them? Tell them come see me.
As they say back in the day, right on.
I think Kyle McHale.
And you gotta stop calling me by my first name on this air. I told you that before.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I am so sorry. I just remember. All right, listen. So Empress T, I want to find. I think Kyle McHale is from the conference. He's also on the line.
Okay. Well, I've got so many callers. That's why I asked you to send me names, send me numbers. But I'll try. Oh, okay. Well, you must have did it like early, like right as we were go on. Okay. Let me see. I don't
know.
I'm going to go to caller 4853. Even if it's not you, we welcome your call. And if you have a comment for us, please bring it. 4853, your line is open.
Good evening. Hello?
Yes, we hear you.
Oh, you hear me? Okay, good evening. I want to thank everyone for welcoming me into this conversation, and it's a very interesting one. I also attended and was a panelist this past Monday, and I enjoyed it, and I think it was very enlightening. And then listening to the discussion that's taking place, I'm really enjoying it in that there seems to be some differences of opinion, which I think is a good thing. And like I said the other day, often conversation stimulates thought, and thinking is an exercise. So we need more of this. We need more of this. So, you know, I just wanted to kind of chime in and also identify myself again. Again, my name is Akonatan Michael, and I'm representing Imani Star Development. And I do believe that this is a very positive discussion, and we need more of it. And I like what's happening. You know, for every journey, there's a first step.
All right, brother. Well, we welcome you, and we thank you for your call and your comments. Okay,
and I thank
we're going
you very
to go
much.
To another. Okay, we're going to go to another caller. You're at 3887. We're opening up your mic right about now. You have a question or comment for us tonight. 3887, your mic is open.
Yes, hi, this is Suzanne Brooks, your woman of color,
hey,
African-American friend.
How are you?
Y'all are
in there
just dissing me. Y'all are just putting me down. I have sacrificed everything but my life for black people, and it is terrible to sit here and to have a black man tell me, I'm not black because you can't tell I'm black when you see me. I'm just as black as anybody. For somebody to say that because I do something as women of color and work with other women of color, that I must be a sellout, or I don't take grants either, you know. And I'm building a global website for us. You can look it up, Women World Culture. It has
mm-hmm.
women of color on there, but it has also African people from around the world on there. And so there's so much confusion about the term women of color. I'm older than probably most, if not all of you. And I can tell you that your perspective on the term women of color, it's just like the term black or the term African or African-American doesn't mean the same thing to everyone. Neither does the term women of color. And so it came. Mm-hmm. It was a term that evolved simply as a way for people who were being subjected to racism plus sexism to collaborate. And the fact that somebody
mm-hmm.
else
mm-hmm.
took that term and used it another way doesn't mean that we are worth nothing, because I'm not less black because I collaborate with other women of color.
Right.
And there's nobody that can say, I supported Million Women March. I have supported Filet every year since the Women Million March.
You know,
been
I don't like first name. I don't do first name basis. Where will people get that? I don't do the first name basis.
Know all your rules, obviously. So, I mean,
okay,
you could tell me that in another nice way, just like you didn't have to say, something about you make some insulting remarks that apply to many African Americans, and there are not
okay.
one set of rules by which we all have to
okay.
conform. That's part of the problem.
Okay. Suzanne, hold right there. All right, now let me just respond by saying this. Number one, this is my radio program.
If you are going there, then you can have it because I don't have to accept insults from you.
Hold on. Oh, she hung up.
Yeah.
Okay. So back to of color. For the record, family, that is a phrase that came from not only a feminist position, and don't get me wrong, I have nothing against anyone, but for me and what I represent and what I say and do, I make it very clear, I don't mix it up with anything.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to the airport, I guarantee you, those people see one or two things. You're
mm-hmm.
either black or white. They're going to look at your passport after they look at you. They ain't looking
That's
at
right.
nobody of color, okay?
Uh-huh.
They see
uh-huh.
one or two things, whether you
uh-huh.
are black or white. Then they look
uh-huh.
at your passport to see what country,
uh-huh.
all right? So now when we talk about physics, when we
uh-huh.
talk about the things that are natural in order,
uh-huh.
it's not of color. Those are not the fundamentals. So when we use these phrases, which is fine in some circles, for some the NAACP is a very good organization.
most don't know that it was started by white people,
mm-hmm.
as with many of the other top civil rights groups. So we're in 2014, family. Before we were called anything, I guarantee you, you was black. You was not of color. Now, all of that is debatable, is true. But here's the reality. There's millions of radio programs, newspapers, and so forth. Take your pick. If you don't like what we talk about here, I certainly invite you to go somewhere else. Just a
I can't figure out what was her dislike. I thought she was a friend of yours.
Well, anybody that knows me know that, number one, I don't do friends. I don't have friends. I haven't done that since I was a child. That's number one. I know a lot of people, and a lot of people know of me. So, you know, again, building relationships. We're talking about relationships here. So, again, I'm a grown woman, so I don't deal with the concept of friends at this stage of the game for me. I have brothers and sisters. I have doctors, lawyers, associates, business people. I don't do friends. I did it as a child because I didn't know any better. See, when you're a child, those these are things that you say because you are conditioned to do so. So as a mature adult, I have to think about the relationships that I want and how I call them. So, again, going back to Sister Suzanne, who I love. And I understand that there's an issue with being of color. That's fine. But that's just not one that I'm going to advocate or you know, try to push. Not in this day and age. Why? Because I know from whence it comes. I know the confusion it does, it brings about a lot of confusion, and it opens too many doors. And being the founder of the Million Woman March, I can't say women of color because I'm not trying to service women of color. I'm servicing the black woman, the black family, the black man.
That's right.
Okay, I'm not, you see, this is not, you know, and again, I have a lot of allies. I work with a lot of people. But that's not my mission per se. Now, some have the guts to say that. I do. Moving right along.
She's going to bring Yolanda in?
Yolanda, where you at?
I'm here. I never left. I'm here.
Okay, Yolanda, no problem. You stay right there. We're gonna go. We're gonna bring you back. Okay, caller, you're at 853. We're gonna open up your mic and see if you have a question or a comment for us. Oops, hold on. 4853. Your mic is 4853. Keep going, going.
Hello.
Are you going to say something? Yes. Are you going to speak to us? 4853?
Yes.
Oh, we already had. Fine. Okay, let's try another one. Okay, caller, you're at 0929. We're going to open up your mic. 0929. Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Yep, we hear you loud and clear.
Hi. How are you?
Fine, and yourself?
Okay, hello, everyone. My name is Lucia.
Hello.
Yeah.
Good. I'm sorry, what's your name again?
My name is Malika Young. My name is Malika Young. I'm fine.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good.
Is this Malika from the panel?
Hi, Ms. Young. Very nice to see you.
Hi, Malika.
Hi. Hello, everyone. How are you?
We're doing well.
Before I begin, how should I address you, ma'am? Because I don't remember your name.
Okay.
And you don't do first names. I'm very clear on that. So
no.
What should I? How should
I? Don't know or don't know real well. I don't do the first name thing.
I understand.
Sister,
I respect that.
Thank you. I appreciate you respecting that. Sister is fine. Doctor's fine. Nana's fine. Empress is fine.
Okay, doctor. I like that one. I'll take that one.
Okay.
No, I was just listening in, and the topic has changed several times. So
yes.
Each time I thought about one topic, we were already on a second and then a third. But the thing now that I do have a quick question about was the woman who just called, Suzanne, I believe her name was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She sounds like she was actually giving her opinion, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, I listened to the dialogue between the two of you, and you stated that this is my radio show, and you stated if you don't like later on, if you didn't like what we were discussing, you could go somewhere else. And I totally understand what you were saying, but my question is it okay if we call and we have a difference of opinion? Even if we don't like it.
Absolutely. Yes,
okay.
Absolutely. It's okay. I think
absolutely.
The issue was she wasn't allowing a response.
Right.
You know.
Oh, so your issue was so that she wasn't allowing a response. Not so
right.
much that she had a difference of opinion of what was being said or, you know, the ideas or whatever. You know, I don't know because I was breaking up just a little bit, but it sounded like to me that she had her opinion and then somewhere along the line, you all were not in agreement, and then at that point, it was a this is my show, so I wasn't sure. I said, oh, I wonder, is it okay for us to call with our opinions and our differences and it still be accepted and move on? Because, I don't know, I felt like maybe because she had a difference of opinion about the woman of color issue, that you weren't really trying to hear what she said or what she was saying.
Well, Let's review that for a few moments. If you can remember, I was very quiet for
there,
I think, giving her the opportunity to say what she wanted to say, and, you know, I had no response.
Right.
However, when I did want to say something, that seemed like not something she wanted to entertain. So when I offer, when I'm cordial and allow someone to speak, all right, which I will always do, if you have listened, I say little. I let people talk. And then when I'm ready to say something, I expect to say it, as any moderator would want to, you know, do. So I gave Sister Suzanne the opportunity to express her opinion. And so forth and so on. Well, at some point, that has to end. So once that was determined, I attempted to interject my response. But then she began to escalate in what she wanted to say. And in doing so, wanted to suggest that I was being disrespectful. Well, at that point, I felt she was being disrespectful with interrupting what I was trying to convey to her, which really was to say that I love you, and we disagree with this idea of color. But she wouldn't even give me the opportunity to do so.
Okay.
So at
I
that
began
point,
to hear her
I had to, right. So, I mean, I'm just saying, at that point, I had to interject the other side of me, which says, excuse me, but, you know, see,
not here.
I wear these different hats, and I'm very patient and understanding. But, you know, at some point, if you get on my nerves, I'll let you know.
Yeah, I understand that. I didn't hear her say that you were disrespectful. I did hear her say that some of the things that you said were offensive. And then I wanted to hear what she was going to actually say was offensive. But then that's where the conversation between the two of you didn't allow that. So I was curious to know what things she was touching on when she said you said a few things that were offensive. Because I didn't get anything that was really offensive. I did get some things that everybody probably would have a difference of opinion on. You know what I mean? But I thought that was part of the reason why we all communicate and are having these type of discussions so that we all can voice our opinions and collaborate and, you know, if it works, it works, and if it doesn't, it doesn't. So I don't know, maybe I missed it when she said that you were disrespectful. I did hear her say that some things were offensive, and I was so curious to know what those things were that were offending her. Just because I was kind of still mentally all over the place, still back from Jeremy and then back from last week's panel, so I had a bunch of things going on through my head at one time. So, you know, okay. It's interesting. You know, I'm enjoying it as same as Mr. Michael said. I'm enjoying the conversation. Didn't have a lot of input at this time on several different things, except to say one thing about the topic that Jeremy was mentioning. I heard someone say there are several things that go on in our community, and I don't know if someone really wasn't with whatever he was exactly his focus was. And I agree, there are several things that go on in our community, but I think this particular one was his focus. So I was kind of curious about exactly what more he learned and what he felt that we could do in areas like this. Because I'm not, this is kind of the first I've kind of heard this topic in this kind of detail in a way, really, to be honest. Mm. Not first I've heard, but actually maybe, should I say, elaborating on such a topic.
Okay, and I think that's a good point, sister. And with that said, we're going to give Jeremy the opportunity to go further into that to provide more clarity. Before we do, though, I just want to add, I think that's one of the reasons why Sister E.I. asked what were some of the references, because mm-hmm. there's quite a bit of work out
some of
there
resources.
That people can really access and get a lot of in-depth information about. So we were trying to see if some of what, you know, he was talking about was related to some of the work that we have seen and that is readily available. There are several brothers in particular. Baruti is one. Dr. Baruti does a tremendous amount of work. Another brother, Kamal Kabon, he does a tremendous amount of work on both of those, both of them on that topic. But we're going to hear me before we do. Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
We're going to go back to Jeremy in a minute. We have one more call we want to take right now. And before I do that, I just want to also answer Sister's question. One of the problems that Sister Suzanne had, see, we've had that conversation before, and I've had it very clear to her before. This is not the first time we've had this conversation.
That seals the deal for me.
Right.
I understand.
Yeah, you know, I've stated that position numerous times and have said to her that I support what she does, but you can't bring that here. I mean, I told her that. I support what you do. Mm-hmm. I'll send your information out, but you can't push that on this program or on me, because that's not what I'm trying to represent like that. So,
Are helping the black women, and I love that. You are helping the black women, but you're not opposed to anyone helping the women of color. That's just
absolutely
not what you do.
Not.
Okay.
Right, exactly.
Right. Wonderful.
I support other people with what they do to some degree, but I make it very clear for me, you don't have to worry about me. I ain't
that's
trying
right.
to get in nobody
right.
else's world. You don't have to be concerned, you know, okay? All right. So
and I respect that, because sometimes less is more. Everybody have a good night. Thank you for having me, and I'll join in again. This is my first time, but I plan on continuing to join, and I'll talk to everyone later. Have a good night.
All right. Thank you very much for calling.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay. We're going to go to one more caller, and then we're going to go back to Jeremy. Caller, you are at 6029. We're going to open up your mic. 6029, your mic is open.
Peace, sister. I'm in the black. And because I'm in the black, that means we're friends. Now, here's my question to your guest. Listen, can two strong-willed people, one woman and one man, with strong wills, can that relationship exist, or is it doomed to fail? Straight answer. Give it to me straight, man. Give it to me black.
Yes, it can succeed.
Well,
it can exist. It does exist.
I agree.
Wait, elaborate.
Agree.
Talk to me.
Well,
yeah,
well the one question
like
is.
Yet.
Well, the one question is why can't two strong individuals succeed?
Yeah.
Because someone will have to prevail. I mean, both wills can prevail. Let's be honest about it. Some will has to prevail. Somebody will.
Why does one will have to prevail?
It's a nature of power.
Good question.
Power has to manifest itself.
So for power, right?
I didn't hear what he said. I'm sorry.
He said for power, right?
Yeah, I mean, so it's power. I mean,
so
it's
are
power.
We talking about people's relationship or just two strong-willed people combating each other?
Well, communication is important in terms of relationship. So when you have, and you get in a situation where you philosophically disagree on whatever, all right, somebody's will has to prevail. Now, the question is whether or not one party or the other is willing to concede. I'm saying that two people with strong wills may not be able or willing to concede. And so I'm asking you, is that relationship doomed to fail, or is there hope in that relationship? If there is, elaborate.
No. Well, I'm gonna throw a few things out there. First of all, it depends on what those two people are trying to accomplish. That's the first thing. So you got to understand the rules of engagement or those two individuals. Second of all, if those two wills are strong enough that they can collaborate, they stunt their own growth because that other person can bring a perspective to the table that can help both of them grow in the area of weakness that they both have. So it depends on what you're trying to accomplish within that relationship.
Right. If it's just a battle of wills, then it's just a battle. It's not, you're not getting to any specific point.
And if you have common goals, then that should determine, that should prevail. See, people got to understand, people want conformity. See, there's no diversity in conformity. There's only unity with difference. So watch this. Our body has unity, but its parts are very diverse. And that's what relationships are like. My left arm just as important as my right toe. Because it needs to function as whole in order for the body to function at its optimum level. So if I want my body to be in tune and in touch, I got to appreciate the different components it brings to the table to make it strong as a unit. And that's the same thing with relationships.
Right. And even when you have two people that are strong-willed, there are weaknesses between the two. Everyone doesn't come completely with all the answers. That's why they were made to be in a relationship, because one brings, as Alex said, something to the table. So maybe we need more of a question of what you're trying to say besides the two strong-willed people not being able to exist. Okay,
I understood the question, I think, pretty well. I'll just respond if I may.
Okay.
I think it's possible, Brother Haki. Needless to say, I have faith in people, and obviously we have survived so much, then that tells us, you know, our tenacity is par excellence. So I think fundamentally speaking, and I think all our panelists and guests would agree, relationships in itself fundamentally have its ups and downs, period. So with that said, when you have people who have strong personalities or characteristics, then needless to say, that's going to be perhaps a little more than normal. Well, from my vantage point, the whole idea of agreeing or involving yourself in a relationship is that you kind of know these things and you're willing to deal with working it out or making it better or whatever. So mature people tend to kind of know that, okay, this is going to have some bumps and some you know, rides in it. But we care about one another enough to say, but you know what, we're going to make it through this. So with that said, my answer, my response would be, yes, I truly do believe that two people who are strong-willed, as you might say, can, in fact, have a productive and a successful relationship. I think, and I didn't know Mother Ruby Dee and Baba Asi, I didn't know them personally, but I had an opportunity to sort of observe them a little bit. And, I, you know, from what I saw, they both was pretty strong, pretty strong. So, you know, looking at, you know, people who I've kind of been able to glance at, and then just also, I guess, just some, you know, basic faith or whatever. But yeah, I think we can. I think we can. I think we have, and I think we will.
But you know, I think I've done some work with Ruby Dee, and Ruby Dee came to California, came to Philly, and did assessment with Sonia Sanchez and showed Lee Ralph. And someone in the audience said, well, this is after Ali had died, that she thought that Ruby and Ali had the best relationship that she's ever seen. And Ruby's response was, and that's what you think. and then I thought, well, I guess we didn't know certain things. Okay. I was surprised to hear that.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised, but the fact of the matter is they still stay till death do you part.
Yeah.
And I'll say last but not least, I think the thing is, I'm sorry, I think last but not least, it's not about really strong wills, it's about control.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. So it always say this, if I see your purpose, I'll find your motive. I'll find your motive, I'll know what your purpose is. So that's why I said you got to understand, what's the goal of that relationship? That's going to determine how you treat one another.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's see. We got time for one more caller. And someone has some background noise there, so you need to be cognizant of that because your mic will pick it up. We're going to go to one more caller, and caller, you're at, 0929. Okay, we're going to open up your mic. 0929,
hello.
Your mic is open.
That's me again. I think I tried it once, and I couldn't get through, and I tried again. But I don't have a problem with being in tune again. It's Malika. In reference, because I see the topic has changed once again, in reference to, was it strong-willed individuals being in a relationship?
Yes.
And I got what the last gentleman was saying, but I kind of missed it. Was there a question at hand, or were we just discussing? If you don't mind me asking again, I'm sorry.
The caller came on, and the question was, can two strong-willed individuals survive in a relationship?
Yes, I'm in a marriage for 10 years now. It'll be 11 in December, and we're both two strong-willed individuals. So yes, it can last, and there's several different ways that it can, and there's several different ways that it can't. So I can just go on about that. But I do agree with the gentleman when he said something like knowing what you want and knowing, you know, the motive of the individual, and it stems back to control, because strong-willed people tend to be bossy and want to have control of situations. So I think what needs to happen in a relationship is that in a relationship with strong-willed people is everyone knowing their role.
Right.
When you know what part you're supposed to control and they know what part they're supposed to control, or you either agree or come to some agreement on that and allow each other to be who you are, it kind of works. But you got to kind of probably do that part first. So, yes, I think two strong-willed people can really truly work out and actually become strong together. So it depends. If it's a challenge and you're competing against one another, then that might make it a little bit more difficult. But when you collectively come together and do it together, then, sure, you know. So, and I could elaborate on that. When it comes to relationships, I have a lot of input, because I've worked very, very hard to get to the point where I am in my relationship, where I am happy, has an understanding, and accepts who I am and who the people who are in relationships with me are, be it my child, be it my mother, be it my husband. You know what I mean? So, yes, I believe that that works. It depends on the individual.
I'm not saying that they're not.
All right, Sister Malika, that was, somebody has some background going on with conversation.
Yes. That's Maurice.
Yes.
You can hear you, Maurice.
That's you, Reese. Is that you, Maurice Henderson?
It is.
It is.
Okay.
I thought so. I know you well. Y'all have a good night.
Good night, Malika.
Sister, thank you so much. You are so on point with your comments. I really appreciate that. Let's go back to Jeremy, because Sister did request that Jeremy elaborate on his position. So, Jeremy, are you still there?
Hello?
Jeremy?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Yes, please. You have the mic.
Yes. I have some sources. I have the Williams Institute at UCLA, which did a study on sexual orientation and the wage gap between homosexuals and heterosexuals. I have the gender wage gap between men and women, which was done by the U.S. Labor Department and the CONSAD Research Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
I have another study on the sexual orientation wage gap with Cornell University. I have another study on masculinity and the wage gap when dealing just within straight men, and that has to do with the level of masculinity that they have and what wages they then afford with that masculinity. And that is by Hofstede, and it's a book called Culture's Consequences.
Okay.
Okay,
so...
Hi, Jeremy, if you would, I think what the sister was asking, if you could elaborate on your position, you know, in terms of how you were addressing it, but we definitely appreciate the references that you gave. But before you go into your position, I just have one quick question. Are any of those black folks that you just mentioned?
These are all institutions, so they could have had black folks under these institutions, including the U.S. Labor Department, the Williams Institute at UCLA, Cornell University.
Jeremy,
so these
Jeremy,
are all institutions.
Jeremy,
not in
no,
the
I got you.
Okay.
Primarily they're from a white frame of reference. Okay, but at any rate, tell us about your position in terms of writing about this topic, because I think that's what the sister was really trying to get some more insight into.
What really led me to write about this topic is the decision of Bayard Rustin in order to move out of the when Bayard Rustin was removed from the African American liberation movement, and why he was removed, even though he was very much interested in the black progression of the black community. And that was the separation between his gay identity and his black identity, and also just teaching in the prisons and seeing how there was how rape and the rape of inmates within the prison caused them to dislike feminine men once they left. So it was a mixture of anti-homosexual feelings and a mixture of that then relating back to gender and gender expression, and how that moved from being a dislike of sexual behavior into being a dislike of feminine behavior, and about what it meant to be a man and how that affected the income of those men within our community, and how many of the reasons why there was these negative feelings towards these effeminate men was not so much personal as it was socialized, and it was to protect the community.
Okay, I'm interested. Can I say something?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
All right.
Yes, please.
So, I just had...
Before you do, Brother Maurice, I just want to tell everyone, we are going to lose our streaming for the Internet, but you can still call in on the number, and we can continue the dialogue. Go ahead, sir.
Oh, wait. What time is it? Are we still...
It's past 12:30.
Oh my God.
We're still on live. We're still on live.
Okay.
We're going to run over about 15 minutes, but go ahead.
All right. So that's why it's always important for me to catch the young scholars before they step out there. And I've clearly said to Jeremy that it's unacceptable to say anything about black people or any other kind of race without using sources from them. So you can't guess about, well, who may possibly have been African American at these institutions. You can't guess about that as much as it has to be clearly stated. And a well-referenced source from somebody acceptable from our community. So, like Baruti, you have to wait. And Baruti and some of the folks previously mentioned are acceptable mm-hmm. sources. And that's how come mm-hmm. it's always good for these young styles to listen to these kind of shows and mm-hmm. and listen to folks who have done certain things so they can be so they can play catch up. Because a lot of times what the scholars do is use books that they've learned from institutions and don't know books that are acceptable from the African American community and African American scholars, and this our people. Mm-hmm, and so we have to be careful, and that's one thing that I learned. I learned from Ruby Dee, Paul Giddings, Viney Burroughs, Oscar Brown Jr., that anything that I do, I have to have something acceptable for my people. I learned that from Leonard Jeffries and Dr. Ben. Mm-hmm. So for anyone else who is pursuing scholarship, you have to understand that there are Amos Wilson is acceptable, mm-hmm. you know, and so you know mm-hmm. there are certain books that if we hear you mention, we can kind of step back and say, okay, well, maybe he has some kind of understanding. But if you don't mention like some of the people that I just mentioned, then you may be frowned upon. So, Jeremy, you just need to know that.
I have a comment to that. Sorry. You first, please.
No, I just wanted to add to that, Jeremy, and I just want you to know that appreciate, you know, the information that you're conveying, because it's so important that we're able to hear as much as possible about any topic that's relevant to black folks. But it's also very important that we, as African people, as black people, make certain that perspective is definitely in there, because other than that, we're only talking about something from someone else's perspective. And it perpetuates what they're saying.
Yes. And I definitely understand that, and I definitely agree with that. The piece that I wrote was an opinion piece, and the opinions used are my own. Just as you can use, I use the facts and I use different research in order to argue my point. But my point was that there was a labor gap and that we wanted to keep as much money within the black community. So the sources that I used only had to do with gender gaps and with sexual orientation gaps. They did not have to do with black men specifically. They only had to do with the differences within the gender and the differences within the sex and the amount of income that they brought in. And my argument was that we wanted to take control of the black dollar, and we want to keep as much of the black dollar within the black community. And that is the reason why there's a dislike feminine men, because we believe that they cause money to flow out of the community by them not earning as much as they would had they been more masculine.
Okay, but then you know,
Maurice, who controls the pay on what they get paid? The companies, right?
The companies control the pay.
So,
and who controls the hirees as well?
Yeah, so that's why we're saying. Well, that's why I was trying to get clarity. Because if it's within our community and most businesses are run by white men, how is it that we are penalizing our own people with this discrimination or difference or dislike?
they are not being penalized for the discrimination and their dislike. I'm simply trying to explain where the dislike comes from. I'm saying that the dislike is not natural to them, that it is a self-protective mechanism in which they are trying to protect the community against losing these dollars, because they don't exist within a vacuum. They exist within society, and they want their members to control as much of the money as possible, and they see their members being discriminated against when they're feminine and making less money.
Who's doing
the discrimination? But at the same time, the companies are doing the discrimination.
Oh, okay.
But at the same time, this discrimination is hurting the community because it causes the community to earn less dollars. And that's the reason why they have an anti-feminine perspective when it comes to men. Does that make sense?
Let me ask, because I'm a little unclear about something. So, Jeremy, are you saying that, generally speaking, the black community is feeling this way about these feminized men? Because So with that said, are you suggesting that you think that the average folk in the black community care about that? Are you suggesting that?
I think that they do care about gender expression, and I think that gender expression is something that is a big issue within the black community, and that there is that it's a very restrictive amount of gender expression, and there have been many studies in order to prove this in comparison to other races and other ethnicities.
This is my specific question. My specific question is, do you think the average person in the black community is evaluating or thinking about whether feminized men are spending money in their community? Do you really think that? Not a research piece from somebody. Do you think the average person in the black community is concerned about money that's going to the black community as a result of a feminized man?
No, I don't think it's about no, I do not, in response to that question.
The reason why
is because I think that there's a misinterpretation. It is not these black feminine men spending money and putting it back into the community. It's these black feminine men earning money that is coming into the community because they are black.
Okay.
The same thing, and then I'm going to say this one thing, and then I'm going to yield to you, my brother, and it's this. I don't know what black communities you've been, but
yes.
I can pretty much tell you that on the average, that would not be a major. In fact, it wouldn't even be a concern.
I come from a Jamaican, a very large Jamaican black community, so it may be different than the African-American black community.
Right. Oh, no, I'd be in them all, trust me. But go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead, Brother Maurice.
Okay. All right. So now, there is one thing that I know about income potential, nightlife at black heterosexual bars. I really ever see feminine men as bartenders from my perspective, and I know my bar owner's friends only like to hire like attractive women who look well, and so I would say, and my perspective and that kind of nightlife, there is a potential to discriminate against very, very feminine men working at bars. I see more of feminine men working in the food industry, like at Chili's and those kind of restaurants. So I would say that there are segments that may subliminally not hire a feminine man. It's like I know police officers. I really ever see an effeminate police officer. Now I may see a what's like a female police officer, but I would really see a feminine police officer. I probably wouldn't listen to him. I'm sorry. You know, so That's my perspective.
Okay. Anyone else?
Well, go ahead.
It's Dr. EI again. I just, that's why I wanted to know what his sources are. And I'm glad that he, Jeremy, that you shared that, it was an opinion piece, because initially I thought it was, something that was, heavily researched. And I'm sure it was according to you, I comprehend better what you were doing in terms of the research, specifically because you shared that the institutional research that's involved in the paper that you did, or the article that you did, and that's interesting because it goes in line with what's happening in terms of feminine males, the feminine black male being projected in our communities, in our schools, it just falls right in line with that. And so, I have a better comprehension of what you did in terms of the work you did with your research.
I'm glad you do.
Okay. Well, family, this has been another powerful dialogue, to say the least. And all of you saying that goes without saying. And I want to thank all of you again for taking the time to join us, for participating, for, being straight up and for being at least very candid. We have to do this again. What can I say? Very, very soon, in the very near future, we must bring about another segment to go further into this dialogue. And because what we want to do the next time, though, is really start talking more about, okay, what are we going to do about some of the things we talked about? That's where we really want to go. I thought we were going to do that tonight. And it's okay, because what we covered tonight, I think, was really, really important. When Jeremy came on, it kind of brought us into another dimension. So, we went away from what I had projected for the evening, but that's okay, because, everything is in its proper place. So, again, Jeremy, I thank you for bringing that topic up. I'm sure it gave a lot of thought, or gave folks, something to really think about further. And certainly Alex and Yolanda. Yolanda, where are you?
I'm here. I'm on the line.
She's the quiet storm. She's the quiet storm.
No, I'm here.
I would like to ask one final question. I would like to ask one final question. Is it possible that we could hear the can we hear this at a later date, like gain access?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. Once we hang up, it goes into the can, as they say, or the box, or whatever it is. But, yes, it's all of our programs for the past 7 years are available at any time. You just go to the website like you normally would. At any time. Yeah, go at any time. Go to the website. www.blogtalkradio.com/EmpressChi, and just go to the date. Whatever the dates are, just go to that date. It'll come right up at your convenience, anytime.
So let me ask you this. How you spell your name? You say Blog Talk.
Blogtalkradio.com slash Empress E-M-C-H-I.
So hold on, which comes talking?
I've already done it before because
they're talking in the background.
I don't remember her name, but I remember her talking about Empress Chi, and I wrote it down.
Oh.
Well, Empress Chi?
I'm not sure who that is.
That's Jeremy and Maurice.
Jeremy? Okay.
They're both of them talking. Hey, she's trying to give me information, and you talking. You got to mute your phone, man. go ahead. I'm sorry. I got slash.
Okay. So, yeah, slash Empress Chi, and that's EmpressChi.
Okay. Empress Chi. Okay, thank you.
Okay, you're very welcome. Okay. And, okay, so, family, again, I thank all of you, Iya Ajua, always, my sister, give thanks. And everyone, you, Alex, Maurice, thank you so much. And we will resume again in the very near future. I look forward to some more of this. As you indicated earlier, or I think it was Alex that said people want more. You know, they want some more food. And this is definitely, you know, nourishment, I think. So, again, I thank all of you. And before we close out, you can provide, if there's some contact information that you want to share, please take this opportunity to do so. We can exchange that.
This is Maurice Henderson. I can be contacted at 215-254-9314 or MauriceBrianHenderson@yahoo.com. That's MauriceBrian, Brian. B-R-I-A-N, Henderson, H-E-N-D-E-R-S-O-N, at yahoo.com, and there are no spaces.
Yeah, and I could be reached at, I'm going to do the shorter version, at sciencepoet@comcast.net. This is Alexander Evans.
Okay. All right. Sister Yolanda?
Miss Yolanda?
All right, she's going.
Okay, I guess we lost her. Okay,
yeah.
And yeah.
I think we lost her too.
No, I'm here. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Okay, I'm here. Yes, yeah, Ajua, IYAADJA. Again, that's IYA, capital A, D as in dad, JUA. Once you put in my name, everything will come up. I'm on Facebook, Pinterest, Tumblr, StumbleUpon, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And my website is WahemiMesu.com. That will come up, too, once you put my name there. That's capital I-Y-A, and then capital A-D-J-U-A. And I'm also on Blog Talk Radio.
And I can be reached at jbami@sas.upenn.edu.
Okay, very good. All right, so I want to thank all of you again, and hey, we will continue. So we're going to leave everyone as we often greet them, and that is in the spirit of Ma'adenhotep. And, of course, we say that because as we strive for peace, we know there can be no real peace until there's truly what we call Ma'ad, which is justice. And as many have said in our community over the years, there can be no justice without peace. There certainly will be no peace without justice. No justice, no peace. No justice, no peace. All right, family, thank you again, and we will be back again together.
Okay.
Soon.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Doctor.
You
goodbye.
Bye-bye.